Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas, ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we'll be talking about the wonderful, magical, dreamy world of Studio Ghibli. And our moderator will be Ana Sofia. Spirit us away. Oh my god.
The delivery service of that joke, 10 out of 10.
So yes, as Josie said, we're gonna deep dive into the adventurous world of Studio Ghibli. Now, to start off, here's a little quick info for our audience that hasn't indulged on said studio. So, if you guys don't know, Studio Ghibli is a Japanese animation film studio, best known for its animated feature films, and it also has produced several short films, television commercials, and even a series. The studio was founded on 1985 by directors Hayao Miyazaki, Isao Takahata, and producer Toshiro Suzuki after their studio Topgraph. If you guys didn't know, Topgraph was the one that actually gave us Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. It went bankrupt and dissolved. So essentially, the studio split in half. And basically, these three men bought the studio while laying off most of this animation staff and changing their name to Studio Ghibli. So the first film that Studio Ghibli released was actually Castle in the Sky. Now, for this episode, the posters were giving a list of Ghibli films. For some of us, it was actually our first time watching some of the films, or an introduction to the studio in general. What are your first reactions after experiencing the world of Studio Ghibli? To start off, Juan, I think this was actually your first introduction to Studio Ghibli. What are your thoughts?
Well, yes, Anna, it was my first time watching Studio Ghibli films. I had always seen them. I'd seen the posters. I had seen them on streaming service. I know people who love the movies, but I personally never got around to them. I didn't know if they were going to be my kind of film. And they have, from what I know, a very large fan base, specifically within the weeb community, from what I have understood.
The weeb community.
I'm sorry.
Weeb community.
I see them in Hot Topic. I see them thriving. I love that they're thriving. You know, I have never seen them, so this is my first introduction to them, to these films. And overall, I had a good time for the most part. We're going to get into it later, but I had a good time. I see why these films speak to a lot of people, and I can definitely see a lot of the films having a huge impact in people's lives. So yes, those are my thoughts. My apology tour is coming next week.
Okay, so Gabriela, I think it is so Gabriela, I think this is also your first time indulging in Studio Ghibli films. So what are your first reactions to it?
Was she spirited away? Did they deliver?
So, backstory. I have not rated any single film on Letterboxd, and I have not told the posers if I liked the films or not. So they have been patiently waiting until this moment to find out if I will be kicked out of the Film Posers podcast. Or if I will be murdered.
Hey, don't rule out an apology tour. I can help you with that.
So, I have friends who are big Studio Ghibli fans and have been begging me for years to watch them, and I've always ignored them. And so when we had to do this episode, I told them, hey, so guess I'm going to have to watch Studio Ghibli films. And they were very happy, but they were also very scared. Long story short, yesterday I recorded an apology video dedicated to my friends for ignoring them for many years because I loved my experience watching the Studio Ghibli films.
La Rosa de la Guadalupe.
Las tensiones se fueron. I was
sorprendida en español.
I was so afraid for you to say that you hated them. I was like, oh my god, what will Gabriela say?
I really can't say that I had a bad experience because I didn't. I actually really loved them.
Gasp.
So yesterday I recorded a video and sent it to my friends apologizing. And my friend Adriana says she will save that video and give it to the aliens when they invade us. So they know that the monumental moment where I said that I loved Studio Ghibli.
Honestly, I'm just happy to hear that.
I know you were so scared. You kept asking me, so did you like it? So did you like it? So did you like it? I just remained neutral.
Josie, I know you have indulged in some of the Studio Ghibli films, especially Spirited Away is your favorite, but you haven't seen some of the list. So what is your general reaction into indulging yourself on the list?
Well, I started watching Studio Ghibli films when HBO Max launched because they had that catalog included. And the thing is that I remember a lot of people telling me that that was monumental because Ghibli films have never streamed to that extent. And I decided that it was time. So I started with Spirited Away. And it still remains my favorite after watching these films. So general thoughts, I love how dreamy they are. I really enjoyed them. I have some minor issues that we'll get into later. But overall, I really enjoyed my time with them. And again, it's just that dreamy aspect when it comes to the storytelling and the cinematography and the animation and the landscapes and the food. And it's just really good animation. It's very good quality animation. My only thing has to do with story, but we can get into that later. But overall, really enjoyed it.
Now, let's segue a little bit into what Studio Ghibli is most known for, and it is the animation. So, a little bit of information. So, the majority of Studio Ghibli films are made using the traditional animation technique, meaning that every single frame is hand-drawn by animators. Before being put together, they are given the illusion of movement to create the film. Now, this is a very repetitive and a very, very time-consuming process, but the studio's co-founder, Hayao Miyazaki, believes in, I quote, hand-drawing on paper, it is the fundamental of animation. Now, despite that Miyazaki's preferred choice is hand-drawn animation, of course, CGI has been used in several Studio Ghibli films to help animators with scenes that otherwise being very overly complicated to create using the traditional animation technique. In the film Princess Mononoke, digital paint was used to speed up the process. The film My Neighbor Yamada, it is the only Studio Ghibli film that is entirely made using computer animation. But recently, we had Erwig and the Witch, that it was actually the first Studio Ghibli film that used 3D animation. However.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, let's not get into that.
If you'd like to hear Anna and Mai's thoughts, we have a review currently streaming on our YouTube channel.
It was certainly
something.
Something, you know, but let's not get into that one specifically. When people talk about Studio Ghibli, the first thing they talk about is the animation. It is so dreamy. It's like, it's the flow of the animation is so great. It's so colorful. It's so vivid. What were you drawn into the animation when you first were seeing this type of films? To start off, Juan, what do you thought about the animation?
I personally loved the animation. It was probably one of my favorite parts of every film. I thought the color palettes that were used were fantastic. I especially loved the color palette used in Kiki's Delivery Service when, for example, there were shots of looking out into the ocean and the landscape and the town. I thought that was just really so well done, especially for the year it was made. And I was like, wow, this still holds up like today. It's beautiful. I thought the line work was really done. You can tell that the artist spent a lot of time on those designs, and I appreciate that even more. I didn't notice the art style of Princess Mononoke until you mentioned it, but now that you did, it makes sense. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, because some of the scenes in Princess Mononoke, they were so intricate that sometimes you just needed a little bit of help with CGI.
Yeah, like I kind of feel now, looking back at it, that it kind in some points it kind of looked like a watercolor kind of effect, which I still didn't mind. I still thought it looked beautiful. And yeah, I love the animation. I thought it still holds up today. That's when you know your artwork is fantastic, when it stands the test of time. And I feel the films we were assigned to watch of Studio Ghibli, they understood the assignment, they created the assignment, and they will keep perfecting the assignment.
No, yeah, one of the things that I really love when it comes to the Studio Ghibli animations is how intricate and so detailed the film is, even in their back, like in the background. Especially on Spirited Away, when you enter into the witch's room and you see all those small details. I just love that.
Okay, so I really don't know that much about animation, as you all know this. So I really have just, it's not that I don't appreciate the art form, because I do. It's just that I really don't know much about it. So, but other than that, it was really beautiful. I think my favorite animation was actually Howl's Moving Castle, because I really loved the creature designs in that film, as well as Princess Mononoke. I think those were my top two, because I appreciated how they did the creatures. You know, I'm really into films about monsters and mythical creatures, and I really liked how they were portrayed in those two films. But if we're going to also talk about animation that absolutely wrecked me, it was Grave of the Fireflies, but I think we're gonna get into that a little bit later. As for Mononoke, I wasn't expecting it to be bloody.
Same. I wasn't ready.
And when it, like, I don't mind when, you know, the wolves appeared and there was blood. I was like, oh hell yeah. I did not expect this, but I don't mind. But overall, I think it was really beautiful. And, you know, I see why these films are so loved, and why, you know, there's an entire museum dedicated to the animation of Studio Ghibli in Japan. And, you know, finally seeing these films, I'm kind of like, I want to visit it and I want to learn more about it. Also, Howl, whoever animated Howl, bless you.
Honestly, I'm so happy that you're giving some such positive vibes.
Honestly, I'm surprised too. I thought I was just gonna be bored the entire time.
No, and I liked how you were talking about Howl's Moving Castle, because I said to you how I think this one is the one that you were gonna like the most.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna comment. I love how the two that we thought she would like the most, she did, in fact, like the most.
I love how right you were, though. You were so right.
Yes, Mononoke and Howl, right?
Yes. But yeah, I did really love the animation. And, you know, it really made me think, because normally I watch animated films and I really don't think about the animation, if that makes sense. In this one, I was actually paying attention to it and wondering, you know, how they did it and what techniques did they use.
Yeah, and huzzah. The fact that each, like, these films were hand-drawn, the process, each cell was hand-drawn, it just makes you appreciate the film more. Now, Josie, we all know, the film posters know that you really love animation. So, what are your thoughts on the Ghibli animation? You know, like, chef's kiss.
Visually stunning. Yeah, every frame feels like a treasure. It always feels like you're gonna find something no matter how many times you think you know these films by heart. And there's just, like, the way Anna mentioned, there's just so much detail in every section that you'll notice something new each time. Like, and just the way they give so much value to the ordinary. Like, I'm sorry for bringing this up, but in Grave of the Fireflies, the can, the tin can with the candy.
And shut up.
And Spirited Away, the importance of clothing and your own identity, and also the back and forth between something I noticed between Spirited Away and Grave of the Fireflies is how trains are used to symbolize the afterlife, which I found very interesting. And that's just my favorite. That's also my favorite part of Spirited Away, the reflections of water, and just how they're able to animate all of those subtle details and the environment, especially. They're so good with nature, which is something that Pixar usually gets praised for as it progresses, because of how they're able to mimic reality but still make it a little bit magical. And I love how Studio Ghibli grounds itself in the fantastical and the not so realistic and still manages to appeal to reality but keep it within its own world. I love how they're able to create their own universe, basically, and it feels so tiny and unique and in the palm of your hands and like a little gift that you found and you can keep.
No, yeah, like when they just take something out of the ordinary, such as the dust bunnies, and they just animate such a simple thing.
That yes, the little soup balls. Life,
that was so cute.
Yeah, and then we have another thing that they also took out of the ordinary, and they just made it so magical. And honestly, I was mind blown. It's when I saw for the first time the cat bus.
Oh my god, the cat bus.
I love that.
That was so cute. I want it.
Yeah, and it's just one of the things that, you know, makes Ghibli so magical. It just makes everything out of the ordinary, and they just gives them life. And that's something that I really enjoy out of these films.
Yeah, it just really makes your heart sing.
It does. And how they take such an ordinary, you know, story, and they just made it very lively. Like My Neighbor Totoro is such a simple story, but the way that it's animated and told, it makes your heart warm, you know. So if you look at their filmography, Studio Ghibli almost always have a female as their main protagonist, yet they're not portrayed as a damsel in distress, or even the opposite of that. They're just ordinary people on a journey just to find themselves in the world. Now, to quote Miyazaki, he said, "Many of my movies have strong female leads, brave, self-sufficient girls that don't think twice about fighting for what they believe with all their hearts. They need a friend or a supporter, but never a savior. Any woman is just as capable of being a hero as many men." I don't know. I think it's just very inspiring in a way. And most of the Studio Ghibli characters always have a female protagonist. And, you know, in a way, you can identify yourself, especially when I watched all the list, the one that I identify myself the most was Kiki from Kiki's Delivery Service, because she is just a girl that she's just trying to find herself in a world, you know. She is tired, but she's trying her best. And I, in a way, I did identify myself with this movie. But we have villains and strong female characters. Like, we got Lady Eboshi and we got Princess Mononoke. What are you guys' thoughts when you see these different female characters in the Studio Ghibli universe? You know?
I really like how they can often be ordinary people, as you mentioned, because, like, just to cross-reference, the thing with Disney films is that they do have female protagonists, but oftentimes they're a princess or someone with some sort of privilege, so it's nice to see someone ordinary that is just as capable of being special and wonderful without having to be like the chosen one or a descendant of royalty or something like that. It can literally be anyone. So I think that's the most inspiring thing about those characters.
Yeah, I agree. I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned it, how most of the films that we watched were female centered, and they weren't one dimensional. They had a lot of depth, and we got to know them very well. I really like how they focus on their fear, and we see them grow and accept it as a part of them. But my complaint was actually that there was so much insta love.
Yes.
Yes.
And it really pissed me off. You know, especially, I think the one that really got to me was in Princess Mononoke. I kind of understood it in Howl's Moving Castle. I wasn't a big fan of it, but like, I understood it. But in Princess Mononoke, it just made no sense. Like, the dude, you literally saw her and you instantly love her. It makes no sense. I don't know. It really irritated me in that sense. So I also don't like how they tend to fall into this insta love trope. But I also like how it doesn't just become part of their identity. You know, they are still individual characters with their strengths. So it's not like they lose all sense, you know, they lose themselves because they fall in love, if that makes sense.
That detail also bothers me when it comes to these films, because it's ever present in all mm-hmm. of the films. And I really liked how in Kiki, it felt like it was going in that direction, but nothing really happens. It sort of stays in that friendship bubble. So. Yeah. And the dynamic was much more natural. My favorite is in Spirited Away, because I think it was very well established the way it progressed naturally. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree with everything that's been said. I really appreciate the fact that these female characters, they weren't, the one who falls in love with esta persona. It was literally, this is the character, this is their identity, here's their backstory, and the fact that they could or could not or possibly doesn't fall for someone is just the plot B, which I appreciate. In Mononoke, when she has the knife towards his throat, I realized that that was a meme I saw on Twitter. So seeing it in the film, I'm like, oh,
yes,
I get it now.
I love that meme.
I now get that meme. I liked how Kiki's, I agree that it stayed a friendship. It was very open-ended because, again, Kiki was 13. So it doesn't have to end in they end up falling in love and all that, which I appreciated. Because I agree with that trope. Sometimes it can get very annoying, especially when a story is so good and the character's so well-established that it's like, no, don't bring a man to ruin this. No. She's doing fine without him. I agree that with Howl, that I see the point. I maybe don't 100% agree with it, but I liked it. Mononoke, I'm going to talk about Mononoke later, but I will say that angle kind of worked for me, kind of. There are moments where I'm like, okay, great. But then at the same time, there are moments where I was like, uno o el otro, I need to focus on one of these two. And I'm preferring that the focus be on her, not on him, because I'm kind of getting tired of him. Also, some of the guys in the movies that were like the interest, they were kind of annoying. They got a little annoying at sometimes. And I'm here like, bro, no. No. Just stop. Like when in Mononoke, the guy interferes with the fight. I'm here like, no, wait, they have to get to this. And then he's like, no, I have to save her. And I'm here like, she's perfectly capable of saving herself. Primero, gracias. Second. But then they end up explaining why. And I'm like, okay, still don't agree. I still want the battle, you know? So yeah, I kind of feel like the guy characters ends up being like, in some cases, unnecessary.
There's also the fact of the female villains. I think that's also a very interesting point to take, the fact that they're actually brave enough to show female villains.
Yes.
And not one-dimensional either.
Lady Eboshi, you know, she was a bitch, but she was a great villain.
But she was the baddest bitch, let's be honest.
She was a bad bitch, okay?
Yeah, real quick, because like what's happening recently with Cruella, where part of the discussion is that when it comes to Disney, regardless of how you may feel about the film, because we can go into that in another time, but it's very interesting how Disney itself has been afraid of showing a very good female villain. And then it's progressed because, I mean, we have Mother Gothel. And slowly we have been coming into the terms that it's okay to show women as horrible people. Because sometimes, I don't know, it feels like people are afraid of doing that because they're like, it's going to be hard to sell because women have to be likable. And sometimes some of the worries is that, oh, if you have a female villain, try to add like someone that's interested in her, maybe a male figure, just to show that men can like this character too. I don't know. I hate that because we see that so often.
It's true. Yeah. We know how you mentioned Cruella, but also with Maleficent. Like, why couldn't Maleficent just be evil? Like, why did you have to like redeem her?
You have to show that. Show that she can be interesting to certain viewers. So I really like that in Studio Ghibli films, they stand on their own. They have their own motivations, and they might be the worst things ever, but they're still there. They still exist, and they're their own person. And I really like that, even though like you can hate them and not agree with them, they're still there. They stand on their own. And again, like you said, badass bitch. And it's like, I don't like you, but I respect you.
Exactly. And
so I really like they're not afraid to show women in a bad light.
Yes.
Because that doesn't make them a bad character. And that doesn't make it unappealing. So I like that one.
I was going to say that at some points, Lady Eboshi kind of reminded me of Namari from Raya and the Last Dragon. In the sense of like you, as you got to get know the character more, you understood them more, and they get past the point of being one dimensional, which is another aspect that I love about the Studio Ghibli films, which is that they could just do a focus on one main character and everyone else just supporting, but they try to give everyone a backstory, try to give everyone enough information so that the audience will stay interested. And would like to get to know the character even more, or at least be able to be like willing to follow along. And with Lady Eboshi, some of her reasons for doing what she does is terrible. But you're also kind of like, when you start to see the person beneath the surface, you're like, wait, she's trying to do this for her people. Sure, it's wrong, but she's coming from that place, and in her mind, she's right. If it ends up being the case, but no, pero. I do agree with that, because sometimes Disney does shift towards the more simple, I'm the villain, you're going to hate me, you're going to root for the main character, and that's just the formula. What I like is that Studio Ghibli plays with the formula with its characters, and thus the characters become even more memorable.
I want to mention also, because I thought I found it very interesting, so the evil character from Spirited Away, Jubaba. I love how even though she's evil, she sets herself some rules and she has to obey those rules even though she doesn't want to.
Yeah, it adds layers to the character and makes them less one-dimensional, which is what we've been saying. So I think that's the best aspect of it, that they don't exist to just be female characters at the center. They do have a purpose regardless of whether they're quote-unquote good or bad. Now, we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. And we're back. Thank you for listening to our sponsor. Now, Anna, continue to spirit us away.
So, in the beginning of the episode, I mentioned that the posters were giving a list of Studio Ghibli films that we're just gonna talk and rant about.
So to clarify, the way we chose these films, we decided to go with, of course, more notable titles that you see often when it comes to the studio, the ones that are often mentioned. And one of them specifically was because I wanted to bring out the big guns and see if Gabriela could react emotionally.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And yeah, hopefully we ever do maybe a part two, because there are so many more films to explore. But Anna's gonna let you all know which films the film posers explored and discovered for the first time for most of us.
So the first film on the list is My Neighbor Totoro, and it was directed by Hayao Miyazaki. I'm exposed myself, and this was actually the first time that I saw it. And I loved it. It felt so nice. It felt like a warm hug watching this film. I love how it is so simplistic, but so wholesome. And again, like I said, they take things out of the ordinary and make it extraordinary. And I just really love that about the film. And Totoro, he is adorable. So I had to say it. So the first one to, you know, spill the beans, i.e. Juan, I saw in the chat that you were loving Totoro. I want to see, like, what are your thoughts on it?
I adored Totoro. Oh, I love it. Again, I also agree that it's very wholesome. I love the character design. I love Totoro and Kappas. I love them. Totoro felt so cute. I'm just saying, like, if I see a plush version of Totoro, I'm gonna just need to give, like, it's like a plush that you want to keep in your collection. You know what I mean? Like, I understand now,
because Totoro's so cute. That's me with No Face.
Yeah.
No Face is creepy.
I love No Face.
Yeah.
Okay.
Continue, Juan.
Yes. What I also love about this film is there's not exactly an antagonist. Not exactly, yeah. Which really I enjoyed. Chill. Exactly. It's just like a vibe. It's a trip. And there's no really, like, how do I say it? Okay, it's not exactly like there's no political message. But there's not really a lot to say, like, in the terms of, like, there's a lot to dissect here in terms of a psychological analysis. Like, no, this is just a movie about these kids who move and they discover this forest and they're just bumping and vibing. And I loved it. It was a fun time because you actually felt like it was your job to just have fun and enjoy their journey. And you did. Of course, there's a part that's sad. I feel like with Studio Ghibli, that's just expected at this point. But at the end, it was a feel-good movie. I felt very good. After watching it, I feel like this is one of the films that I would definitely rewatch. I think it's probably one of my favorites out of the assigned list. I personally felt exactly like Anna said, like it was a warm hug, and you kind of got taken back to your childhood, and you're like, ah, simpler days, simpler days.
I also, what I feel like was that even though the children did have their problems, they were taking away from that into this magical, you know, world with Totoro and such to, you know what, forget about their problems for a moment and just be a child.
That's what I loved about it. And that's why I personally connected more with it, because as a kid, yeah, some things go on in your life and perhaps you're not ready to deal with it, like the younger sister in that case was, and you needed that escape, and Totoro in that forest was that escape. Also, Totoro with a leaf on his head and holding the umbrella. I lost it at that point. I was like, that's it. I'm standing. Sign me the stand card. I adore this creature. It is so cute.
Do you, it's that I've seen this before. Do you think it all really happened or was it child imagination?
Child imagination. I think it was a child, I don't want to bring up Bridge to Terabithia, but it kind of felt like Bridge to Terabithia a bit.
Oh, okay.
In terms of like the childhood imagination. For them, it was real. Because even the father knew at some points, like, you know what? Instead of like saying that might not have happened, let me just indulge them. And help them feel real because they're kids. They're in a new town. So for them, this is like their way of coping, especially with the sad situation going on with the mom. So I would have to vote. It did not exactly happen. It was definitely imagination. Mm-hmm. I still loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it was definitely an escape. And even for the dad, because there was this one scene where he just stared at the trees and he imagined his daughters with Totoro. Because at that moment, he felt really stressed with work. So I feel that it's just a type of escapism with what's happening in their life.
Yeah.
But Kappa's was totally real.
Yes.
You can't change our minds.
We love the cat bus.
Cat bus? Magic school bus? I think there's a connection here.
Josie, sumpai. What are your thoughts on Totoro?
I had trouble with Totoro. I just remembered it was the first Studio Ghibli film I actually saw. So it wasn't Spirited Away. I confused them. The first film I ever saw was Totoro. And I feel as though if I rewatched it now, I would appreciate it more. Because I still had not been familiarized with the way Studio Ghibli does storytelling. It's taken me a while to get used to it, but after watching all these films, it really did help a lot. Because I was talking about this with Gabriela. I think we all know I'm a pacing snob.
Yes.
And no, Totoro
the is correct, just... The correct word for you is pacing connoisseur.
I'm a pacing connoisseur. And Totoro is a slice of life film, and I was not prepared for it. I did not know going in. I just knew I was like one. I just knew about Totoro. I didn't know what was happening, etc. So that first watch, I rated it unfairly. It took me more than a week to finish, but I still appreciated it by the end, which is a common theme when it came to a lot of these movies where I think if I watch it again, I'll appreciate it more in terms of story because animation-wise, it's all beautiful. It's all extravagant. It's all fabulous, but you really need to pay attention to story and just be prepared that some of them could be a little slow because it does turn, a lot of it just turns into slice of life. And that was especially the case for Totoro because it's not driven by events or plot specifically, it's driven by character and emotion, which is one of the things that makes the studio stand out. But for a first watch, and not knowing what I was getting into, it was a little bit difficult for me. And I remember I commented it in WhatsApp, the chat, when I first watched it. And Anna was like, but that's how Studio Ghibli works. And I'm like, I know, I'm getting used to it. I did not know what to expect. But overall, it's a good film. And I would recommend it because it's very comforting. But if you've never seen it, just be mindful that if you're very used to fast-moving films or just things happening all the time, be ready to just sit back, relax, and enjoy a very low-key story.
I just feel that Totoro is just in the moment. It's just a vibe, I guess. Because it's just children.
That's the perfect way to describe it. It's a vibe.
I actually loved Totoro.
Yay.
And the reason why I loved it so much is because I could relate, you know, as a child, you know, I always wanted to find a creature in the woods and become friends with it. You know, it could sound creepy now, but as a child, you know, it made sense. I would look at the woods and I would be like, oh my God, like, I wonder what's in there if I can befriend it. So, you know, seeing that actually happen in Totoro, I saw myself in the characters. because I wanted that. And I, you know, it was very sweet and it was very cute and it made me happy. And come on, how can you not like Totoro? He's like this giant fluff ball that you just want to hug.
Exactly. My neighbor Totoro just feels like a more wholesome version of something Guillermo del Toro would make.
Exactly. Exactly. That is very accurate. Yes.
Okay, so moving on to the next film on the list, and it is Spirited Away. Directed by Miyazaki. And if you guys didn't know, it is the only Ghibli film that was actually that was nominated and won an Oscar. We love to see. Spirited Away was it's actually my first Ghibli film that I watched, and I rewatched it today, and it holds up. It still holds up.
Yes, sir.
It brings that nostalgia to it, and I just love it. I love the color palettes. I love the stories. I love the character building. I don't know. I can't find a single thing that I do not hate about this movie, do not like about this movie. I just love it. It is my favorite Ghibli film. And, you know, it brings that certain nostalgia to it. I think it has to do with the soundtrack. I just love it. But now, Josie, I know this is also your favorite film. So, Sumbai?
I can't talk about it too much because I think I'll cry. But it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love this film so much because it's a little bit more dynamic, which I really mm-hmm. appreciate it. Because again, pacing connoisseur. I like the fact that even though stuff is happening, it's not super fast paced to the point, because there are some scenes that in a more Western approach you could cut them out, but I like that they're in there, especially like when she's cleaning the bathtub and all that. I like being able to see her world and see her develop as a character and grow as a person. I like those scenes. And usually, again, I think the best way to describe it is that they feel like filler scenes, but in a Studio Ghibli film, I like how quote-unquote filler scenes are as important as anything else, like anything that can move the plot forward, etc. So I really like how how Spirited Away balances that. Also, I just love Chihiro. She's my favorite Studio Ghibli character because I just see myself in her. I love how she's so afraid of the world and so afraid of doing things, and she still does them anyway. And I just freaking love her. She's so courageous and brave. I think she's the most courageous and brave character out of all of them, especially because what she goes through is not easy and she still does it. And she has a right to be scared, but she still pushes through. And I just freaking love her. I really love No Face too, because he's misunderstood.
Oh my God.
And he just wanted friendship, and he looks creepy. And it's, again, just esta película plays a lot with appearances and what lies beneath the surface. So I really like that. Also, I'm blanking on her name right now, but the one that helps Chihiro around, she's voiced by the same person that voices Megara and Hercules, so that drew me in as well. And just the cinematography and everything, and you can tell why it won an Oscar. It's just beautiful. And I'm gonna stop, but this is a great film.
Gabriela, what are your thoughts on the film?
So this was actually the first Studio Ghibli film I saw, because it was Josie's birthday. See? And that's what she wanted to watch. So I watched Spirited Away and I did like it, but I don't think it's my favorite one, which I know I'm a heathen, but I don't know, something just didn't click for me with this film.
I think
film.
We all know I'm the heathen and we'll get into that soon, so
you
fine.
Are the heathen. But the thing that truly changed my life when I saw this film is that I remember once seeing a sexy No Face costume. So all this time I thought that No Face was, you know, that he floated, you know, like a ghost, right? But turns out that No Face actually has legs.
I remember this. We had to pause the film.
Because I lost it. Because I lost it. So technically, a sexy no-face costume is technically accurate. Because no-face has legs.
The film has never been the same for me because every time I rewatch it, I just think of Gabriela talking about sexy no face costume. And when freaking no face shows his legs in the film, I'm like, the sexy legs disappear in my head. And I'm like, Gabriela, damn you.
You're welcome. That's all I could think about.
But yes, for anyone who hasn't seen this, no face does have legs. He does not float.
I thought he floated.
He's a corporeal fashionista. I will say, No Face is freaking creepy when he adapts, absorbs the voices of other characters. And I'm like,
that
oh.
is very creepy.
Yes,
it is very creepy.
I was like, ooh, this is a spicy film.
Yes,
it's fantastical and a little bit creepy. But get also, a side of horror.
But also, I did really love Haku.
And again, great. I love how it wasn't forced.
Yeah.
I believe their attraction to each other. And when they were attracted to each other, I was like, oh, I buy it. But also, going back to that, I really like how we only saw explicit romantic storylines when they were older characters. When they were younger, it was more like a crush.
So, I liked Spirited Away. I thought I could definitely see the Alice in Wonderland comparisons. With the storytelling, I am with Gabriela in the sense that not of sexy no face, but I am on the same page when it comes to
madre.
The thing is, I've seen the photo and now I know that she wasn't levitating by Dua Lipa. She was just with legs. I do agree with Gabriela in the sense that it is not my favorite film from Studio Ghibli. Again, that's like you said, it's kind of like, well, we're heathens now, but I don't know. I don't think I could. I didn't connect with it as much. It could have been that I also saw it late at night. So maybe that's it. Maybe I need a rewatch. But yeah, I felt more connected to the first film I watched, which was Totoro. But it's still, I still think it's a great movie. And I definitely see how it deserved to win the Oscar.
Yeah, I do agree. I do agree because I remember talking to this with my friend Adriana. This is her favorite film. And so when I told her I watched it, obviously she was also very careful because she knows how I feel about animation. So she was not expecting me to consider it a masterpiece. But I remember talking about how I just felt that the story had a lot of plot holes. And that didn't allow me to, you know, kind of like connect with it as much as, you know, I didn't connect with it as much as she did. But I did connect a lot with Totoro.
Okay, so the next film on the list is Kiki's Delivery Service, directed by Hayao Miyazaki. Out of all the films that I watched, I felt that this one was the most relatable. Again, I feel that this is like a coming-of-age story. And you just like relate to Kiki because she is trying in a way to find her self-confidence to go through adulthood. And I really liked that message that she gave out. To start off, Josie, what are your thoughts about Kiki's Delivery Service?
I hated it. It made me cry.
But
okay. Stop lying.
No, in all seriousness, it made me cry so much. I was sobbing by the end of this film. And at first, well, I knew why, so why am I lying? So I was going to say at first I didn't know why, but let's be real. I dissected it. It's so lovely, especially because I know that it's inspired by Stockholm, but it just had this Southern European feel, especially like it reminded me a lot of Italy. And I hate to be that student that's like the kid from Booksmart that's like, España, when I was in Barcelona.
God, he's dating Ben Platt.
Let's not talk about it. Don't bring him into this mess. Okay. Anyways, it reminded me a lot of it just had that appeal of walking down it just transports you. That's the best way to, like, it transports you. It's so beautiful. The music, everything. It just feels like if you want to take a vacation, watch Kiki's Delivery Service, because you feel like you're there with her. And I just could relate to her so much, wanting to move to this big city by the ocean and see the ocean for the first time. And I just loved her. Like, Chihiro is who I think I am as a person, but Kiki is the person I want to be. And I just absolutely adored her. But also, I just cried a lot in the end because, in all caps, I'm there just sitting like, what do you mean Gigi never talks again? And it made me so sad because it just, I don't know why, the thought of her flying alone to deliver the packages without having Gigi talk to her just made me sad, because she has to be alone with her thoughts. And that is the most depressing thing for me. But it just, it also has to do with the fact that she grew up. And that made me cry even more.
I was in Mamala when you told me that.
Especially because I had to Google it, because I couldn't believe that Gigi never spoke again. And then the explanation was that it was that Gigi could never actually talk. It was just Kiki projecting herself onto Gigi and hearing back the voice that she wanted to hear. So it's basically her inner voice projecting itself onto Gigi. And it was mostly for reassurance, kind of like when you have training wheels. And eventually the training wheels came off and she no longer needed Gigi's voice, quote unquote, to support her and encourage her, because she already had all of that inside of her. And I'm like, that is so bittersweet.
It's just the fact that at the end, the ending felt so bittersweet, because of course
it is.
Gigi doesn't talk anymore, but at the same time, you see Kiki slowly building her confidence back again, and it just,
yeah,
it felt sad. I don't know why.
And it's also because she can now make friends, and she's coming out of her shell, and she's just coming into her own, which is what you want to see. But also, it's just that bittersweetness of when you leave, like when you go into adulthood and you realize that you're growing up, and that's what that movie is about. And I just started sobbing. Because again, it's exactly that. It's so bittersweet. It's just a reminder of everything that you lose, even though you are gaining stuff. And I know that that's the bright side, but still, during my first watch, I could only focus on what she was losing instead of what she was gaining. But I was very happy for her coming into her own as a person.
Okay, so I wasn't a big fan of Kiki.
Oh no, why?
Was that the hot take you were talking about?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. Ahora entiendo. Adriana, if you're listening to this, we'll take care of her.
Her apology tour starts next week.
I thought, you know, I just thought it was very childish. I wasn't really vibing with the story. It felt like nothing happened. And to be honest, until Josie had that breakdown on the group chat over Gigi not talking, I didn't even realize that happened.
And so Juan, what did you think?
So glad you asked. So I actually really liked Kiki because it was childish. It was a coming of age story. It's literally her going off into the world. Her parents didn't want her to go. She had to turn 13 and to take a year of studies, which I find ironic that this film was really Kiki gets exploited into capitalism and using her powers for like a business in order to like get, you know, shelter and then forget about her magic training. But I loved it. I loved the relationship between Kiki and Gigi. I loved the sassy banter. Me being someone who uses that a lot, I was here like, Gigi, you're the best here. I really liked it. It's wholesome. It's feel good. It's beautiful animation. I agree with Josie. I literally thought of Italy when I saw the waterfront. I was literally like, oh. That is, yeah. Italia. I am dying.
It felt like a combination of so many different places that I had to Google, and it is in fact inspired by Stockholm.
And I see that and I'm like, yes, I love to see it. I could have literally just paused that frame right there when they're looking out into the ocean. I'm here like, okay, 5 stars. But yeah, I liked it. I will say, though, it does deviate from the original plot. That's my only, like, critique. Because it was like, I'm going to go be a witch. And it's like, yes, go be a witch. Her, I'm just going to fly and take orders for someone because I moved out too soon and did not realize that this was going to happen. It's like, well, I understand you. But she does find what she believes ends up being what her magic is meant to do. Which is inevitable, which is at the end, to help everyone.
Yeah, because I felt that at first, she tried, it feels like we kind of missed the part where she tries different stuff and techniques to, like, figure herself out. Y ya, desde la primera, she was like, you know what, my technique is just flying around. And in that aspect, I wanted to see her figuring herself out and what she's good at, no como que de cantazo.
I also feel, and this might be me going, like, reaching a bit, but mm-hmm. that her purpose was to show that town that what their misconceptions of a witch was not completely true, that there are still good people out there who plan to use their magic for good and helping others, in this case, helping people in the community, versus what they knew, which was more like the fortune teller who, like, could potentially turn evil because, you know, she's just like, I have magic, I have powers, I plan to use it. Which is not the point sometimes. Depends on the story.
Yeah, I also was laughing when Kiki became, like, kind of depressed with her life. I was like, welcome to the club.
That's just adulthood. That's Kiki discovering adulthood through capitalism.
You ain't special. We are all depressed.
I will say, though, another part I didn't like was that the parents were just there for like 5 minutes, and I would have liked to have seen more of a development with the characters of the parents that were originally hers, because while I do feel she grows a closer connection to the person who provides her shelter, I'm also here like, wait, but your parents also like raised you. So I'm here like, I felt like that was also kind of missing. Like, it didn't really feel like she was homesick, which if you're young, I definitely think you would be homesick.
Maybe it's because she didn't want to, like, worry their parents as to, like, maybe she wasn't feeling that great for most of the film. And
she does say she doesn't want to come back home and be a disappointment, even though they tell her it's all right to come home if it doesn't work out. But what I feel is, I feel like as the audience, we were a little bit robbed of more of just the parent and Kiki connection, at least the little scene. If we had seen them get a letter from her explaining everything and they have like a back and forth exchange, I feel like that would have been.
I mean, we see them in the end mm-hmm. in the credits, which that made me happy because I wanted to at least see them again one last time.
Exactly.
And I like that we got that.
Exactly. We got that.
Yeah, I also really like how the film just deals a lot with maturity, especially when you see her compared to other female characters in the film.
Yeah.
And also, it's just sad the fact that she got depressed because of the reaction that girl had to her grandmother's gift. And I was there with her.
Yo, I wanted to fight a kid. I was ready to fight her. The grandmother tried hard and she just wanted to give her something, and she baked something with so much love, and I'm here like, tú sabes qué, tú no mereces eso. I would have thrown that food in her face and then left with on my broom and be like, skeet skeet bitch, I'm sorry, tú no merecías el amor que la abuela te dio. And that is on period.
It is,
yeah.
But also abuelitas are special and film posers.
But also the cake that they make, Kiki, that cake looked so good.
Yeah.
And I saw a YouTube video where they actually recreated that cake, and it looked so good.
Okay, so the next film we're going to talk about is Howl's Moving Castle, directed by Hayao Miyazaki. So
yes, sir. Yes.
I mean, Josie, you want to start?
No, me.
It was beautiful. Take it away.
I loved it. It was my favorite one. I started watching in like 15 minutes and I was like, oh my god. This is it.
Yay.
This is it.
I knew it.
For fin.
But also,
yeah, this one was gonna be your favorite.
But also, like, now I understand why people simp howl. Like, I understand. I am part of the club now. Like, when he appears and he's just so suave and so mysterious, and then, like, he's so angsty and emo and such a diva. God, I love him. And also, he was voiced by Christian Bale in the dub.
Yes.
We love film Howl.
Yes, we love Howl. And we love this film. It was so much fun. I was so invested in this story.
I just can relate to her so much, being a young woman that turns into an old lady, because that's also how I feel every single day.
But also, the whole curse thing, I was so confused by it because, you know, she gets turned into an old lady, mm-hmm. but then when she's asleep, she turns young again. And there are some moments that she's with Hal that she turns young and she's still cursed. So I was so confused as to how the curse worked.
I have to rewatch it, but it has to do a lot with how she sees herself.
Yes! My friend Adriana gave me the TED Talk.
Somebody?
Okay. So it has to do a lot with her confidence and how she sees herself. Because obviously when she's asleep, she's not, you know, kind of like that focused on how she looks or how she feels. She's just resting. Therefore, she turns young again. And so there are moments when she's with Hal. Hold on. I'm looking for exactly what she sent me. Hold up. I'm looking for the risk. It has to... My dear friend, this is all Adriana Matias. I'm Adriana Matias. She's listening to this. Hi. It has to do with finding her confidence and lack of happiness. At the beginning of the movie, she was kind of done with life and she had no motivation. So the curse kind of brought out how she felt inside. But I loved it. I loved the animation. I also love how Howl was kind of like this monster. And I was like, I love monsters. It's fine. I love you, Howl.
May all your bacon burn.
Also, Calcifer.
I love Calcifer in this house.
Him. But and also shout out to how we saw Howl's booty in this film. Like, now I know how Josie felt in Invincible when she could not stop talking about
Gabriela. Don't expose
this turned
me.
Into a simping hour.
This is Howl's simping hour. Anyways, love this film. Love the story. The world building was so chef's kiss. I loved it. And yes, you were right. This was the film that I loved the most. I am exposing myself.
I want to start with an apology because I did not
love
the movie the way y'all did.
No.
Okay, then I'm gonna go.
Okay. I didn't even get through my YouTube apology video.
I actually filmed my apology video for this after I finished this movie. There's an apology video. It exists.
Okay, so here's the thing with me. I felt a bit disappointed with Howl's Moving Castle, and I think it's because my expectations were very high. Because everyone who I've heard talk about Howl's Moving Castle loves it, and they gave such high praise for it. And I really enjoyed the score. I really enjoyed the animation. The world building was fantastic. But I felt like the plot, like, it had so many things going on that it got a little too complicated for its own good. And I'm here like, no. Like, the other films were, like, simple. Make it like that. Because at one point I was there, like, there are too many things going on and I lose interest.
Yeah,
that's usually the most common complaint. That's the most common complaint.
See, here's the thing. I liked it when Studio Ghibli decides to go out and make super complex worlds and plots. Because that was my problem with Kiki. I felt that there was nothing going on. So I lost interest. But with Howl's Moving Castle, I was so invested. It was this rich world with all of these creatures and, you know, the wars and how they all connected and how Howl had different identities to try to keep up with everyone. I loved it.
Yeah, that was complex. my yeah That was my thing with Totoro.
I liked aspects of the story, and I felt some of those aspects worked really well. For example, the world building, like you said, the door that changes worlds. I loved that. I loved how, yeah, okay, she turns old, but now she's got to fix it. And I'm like, okay, I'm invested there, but then it gets a little too complicated towards the middle, and I'm here like, okay, just like explain it to me like I'm in like really, really, really basic turn. So I didn't not like it. I did like it. I do think it's still, even with that, it's still a really good movie.
Yeah, I feel with this movie specifically, the story and the plot, it's a little bit messy. However, when it comes with the animation, the world building, the characters, like that balanced the movie out.
Yeah, I agree.
And we just get by it, you know?
I really like how this film also has to do a lot with vanity and just also inner beauty and kindness, mm-hmm. which I feel like it is very talapar con Beauty and the Beast in terms of themes and message. But I also really liked how this woman had two hot men simping for her because there was the prince, there was the scarecrow, and then there's Hal. And I'm like,
that was so funny. Yeah. That was so funny when the scarecrow turns into a prince at the end and he's like, I am back and I have been saved by true love's kiss. And then she just goes to Hal and he's like, well, shit, guess I gotta go now. I love that.
Well, guess I gotta go back to
I gotta go.
Kingdom. I gotta go.
But also, he just leaves jumping on the same stick that he used as a scarecrow. I have many questions about that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I remember, I think I talked to Anna about this when I first saw it, but it's the same thing that Juan said. There's just a lot going on, and a lot is, they tried to resolve a lot by the end, but it's, again, it's a thick book. It's a thick-ass book, mm-hmm. si no me equivoco. So mm-hmm. Adapting it was interesting, but I think they got a pretty good result. A lot of people liked this movie, and I liked it. I liked the dynamics. I liked the characters. Again, may all your bacon burn.
So the next film on our list is Princess Mononoke, directed by Hayao Miyazaki. And I love this film. I love these strong female characters that we have going here. I love Eddie Eboshi. I love Princess Mononoke. I also love how they draw nature. It's so, they took something very simplistic and they just gave like life to it. And I just love that. So to start off, Juan, what are your thoughts on Princess Mononoke?
I wasn't ready. Okay, so I really liked the animation in this film. I thought it was beautiful to look at. I thought it had some great themes and messages about man versus nature and power, which I feel are still relevant today. However, I'm sorry. I felt the story dragged a little bit during the middle act to the point where I got a little bit bored. As for the violence, I wasn't expecting it. That part's not really a negative for me. I just wasn't ready to see limbs flying. I mean, it had a great concept. I thought it was really interesting. It kept me till the end to be like, okay, let's see how this turns out. But in the middle, I was a little like, it's losing me a bit. I still think it's a very ambitious, bold, and magical film that, for the most part, I was able to escape into the world it created and enjoy it. And like I mentioned, I really liked the Eboshi and Mononoke like fight between those two. I was like, yes, this bad is what bitch. I'm here for. Bad bitch energy. Eboshi.
Yes.
Like, I was here for it.
I really liked Mononoke. It was actually my favorite before I watched Howl's Moving Castle, so I would classify it as my second favorite. But also, I love how none of you thought I was not going to recognize Gillian Anderson's voice.
I knew.
She started talking. I was like, oh, hi. And she played a bad bitch of a wolf. Love that for her. I love that for her. Anyways, other than Gillian Anderson, because that alone itself warrants 5 stars, obviously, her presence alone. I really like Mononoke. Again, I think it's the same thing with House Moving Castle. The world building was just so interesting to me. And this whole rivalry. I remember I read a review on Letterboxd that said, it said, Avatar, who are you? And Princess Mononoke says, I'm you, but stronger. And it's very true. Because basically, this film does what Avatar wanted to do, which is kind of like comment on, you know, how the exploitation of nature and how humans destroy everything for their personal gain and they don't think of the consequences. But this film does it better because then Avatar, you know, kind of turns kind of like a turns into a white savior movie, while this film actually comments on that very well. And I really liked it. Loved the animation. I think it's my second favorite animation of the films that I watched. I love how it turned violent. I love how it chose violence and committed. And I really like the characters. But again, my only complaint is the insta-love storyline. But other than that, I really love this film. But it was also a little bit too long.
Yeah, I agree there. It was a little too long.
It was a little bit... When I saw that this film was two and a half hours, I was like, oh my god.
It's a good film. It's super long. And that's my thing, again, pacing konosawa. That's my thing with a Studio Ghibli film. Sometimes I think they're too long. But again, the only one I forgive is My Sweet Baby, My Sweet Child, Spirited Away. I don't mind the length. Keep it coming. But with all the other ones, I think you need to justify, with any film, I think you need to justify your length up to a certain point. And I mean, it speaks to the artistry because I mean, they're drawing all these frames and everything and the films are super long. So you can only imagine how much time and effort went into these films. But also, Princess Mononoke could have been shorter. There were parts there that didn't add to the overall story, but still, it did add to dynamics, so you can say that it does influence. But other than that, I liked it. I put it above Howl's Moving Castle just because of the story and the message. I'm with one. I was very, it was hard to get through at some points because it you can feel it. This is one of those films where you can feel how long it is.
I really like how, before the one that we're going to talk next, this is the one that is most mature out of the list.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, when it comes to themes like...
All the blood. And I was surprised when the head started so much, falling off. And all I was like, blood. Oh!
And then we have Man versus Nature. That is something we haven't seen in Studio Ghibli film, in a sense, because they do... We do get to see like a lot of nature themes throughout the filmography, but not like this one. So I thought it was pretty interesting, and I do agree. I wish I could have seen from the perspective of Princess Mononoke, and yeah, like the romance between the kid and Mononoke, it was kind of out of place, and I just wanted more focus on her and her fights, and you know, Lady Eboshi. We love that.
We love her.
I mean. In his defense, she started running down that roof and started swiping that knife everywhere, and I was like, I get it.
Yeah. Good for her.
Good for her, yeah. You know?
Good for her.
So, there was a rumor that I thought it was kind of funny when Princess Mononoke was released in the United States. So, the one that was, how do I say, it was releasing it, the company, it was actually, yes, it was Harvey Weinstein's company. However, the thing is, he got sent a package, and inside the package, there was a katana with a yes. note that said, no cuts.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, our last film. And this one was purposely less for last, because I feel there's a lot to talk about with this one. So,
oh boy, I'm taking a deep breath already.
Okay, so the last film is Grave of the Fireflies. It is actually not directed by Miyazaki, It is directed by Asao Takahata. And his filmography is actually partakes more into the mature side of Ghibli. He has done films as Only Yesterday and The Tales of Princess Kaguya. What I love about this film is how it shows that animation is just not for children. It could also partake in more mature content. With this film, I know Gabriela has a lot to say with this one.
Listen, just wanna say that when we were assigned this film, I was specifically told that this is the film that will prove if I have a heart or not, as if I already don't cry in literally everything. Come on. The other day, I freaking cried in Gerald Butler's film Greenland. How dare you do this to me? Like, I can never watch this film again. I can never watch this again. Like, what the actual fuck was this? This was, and I've seen depressing shit. This was one of the most depressing films I have ever seen. The level of heartbreak I experienced in this. But as a film, it's really good. I like that it was only an hour and 30 minutes long. It does sure pack a punch from the very beginning. I remember Anna telling me, but you know it from the beginning. Yeah, but it's not the same to watch it happen.
It's the journey that this film takes.
It was worth because you know it was gonna happen, and every second I was like, oh my god, is it here? Is it here? And I would cover my eyes because I was afraid of how it would happen. Yes, Heathen, anything else you would like to add, Heathen?
Yes, I am a heartless heathen. So I didn't cry at all watching this film. I liked it. It's my least favorite Ghibli film that I've watched so far from the studio. Something was missing for me. I don't know what it is. But still, it's a great film. Don't get me wrong. I like how Anna said, you already know what's going to happen from the beginning. It's about the journey. And the journey was very sad. And I think it was basically that. It's just a very depressing film. I did appreciate how it highlighted and it was rooted in history and reality much more than other Ghibli films. There was no quote-unquote, let's call it magical realism for now. There was no magical realism involved in the story. And the fantastical elements were all gone. It was what you see, what you get. It was very gritty. It reflected a lot of what has affected Japan and their history, and I really appreciated that. But I will say again, it did not have those fun elements that we enjoy from the studio.
But I do like, I think what the strength of this film is how it comments on war. And I remember reading up on it after I finished watching
it. I really love that.
And how they just wanted to show, you know, because obviously, especially in Western film, there are a lot of films that glorify, you know, war and the army the and all of that.
Specifically?
Yeah.
I love how they did it.
I'm going to say with my whole chest. With the whole chest. The U.S. loves to glorify their army and all of that. And you see this film and it's like, you see the reality. This is stuff that even though it's not about a specific person, it is something that very likely happened.
Yeah. And I also really like how it has that element of Peter Pan and Wendy.
Yeah.
But you don't get that escapism.
I mean, the movie is based on a semi-autobiographical short story.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, shit!
Oh, I was hopeful we'd skip me. Emma exposed myself. This was my least favorite Studio Ghibli film. I got to the point where I did not want to finish this film because it was too much of a struggle to get through emotionally. And I found myself off-put by the movie. So I did not like it. I will say, though, the animation, beautiful. Like every other Studio Ghibli film I've seen, it is beautiful. I watched the dubbed version because that was what was available, just like the other films. It's not bad by any stretch, but I personally could not get through it. I got through it. I'd never want to go through that again. I am suing whoever put that on the spreadsheet for emotional distress.
No, please. I have no money.
I'm suing.
Okay, but can we talk about the last shot of Grado the Fireflies?
Ana Sofia Sintrong.
Where they are sitting in the bench. And then you see them in the future.
Ana, I'm getting teary.
I'm sorry. When I was doing my rewatch, I totally forgot about that scene. I was like, damn. That was depressing. That means that they're just wandering spirits around, never resting in anything. And then
they're finally together again.
They're together. But there's another thing I realized. So when you see at the end, he actually put their sister's ashes on the candy. And then at the beginning, we see the fucking police guy.
Throw
it away. And I was like, bro.
Yeah, he threw it away and her spirit was released. And God.
En la mala.
Well, that's an interesting note to end this episode on. Please let us know which other Ghibli films you would like us to watch and talk about. And maybe we'll do a part 2 for Studio Ghibli. But yeah, that's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Where can they find you, posers?
So you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter as Ana_Sofia53 and on Letterboxd as Ana_Sofia.
And you can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me at The Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. If you recommend something for the next episode of Studio Ghibli, please don't make it depressing.